Welcome to the Business Bitcoinization Show, the show dedicated to helping you enrich your life and grow your business with Bitcoin, the hardest money on planet Earth. I'm your host, Josh Friedman, and today I'm sitting down with my friend Anaya, who is actually not a Bitcoiner. I did this interview for an organization that I'm on the board of called Bitcoin is Better, whose focus is to educate middle-class families about Bitcoin. I'll be sure to include the Bitcoin is Better YouTube channel in the show notes. Luke Broyles and others have done similar videos on the YouTube channel, and I think you might enjoy listening to some of them. The entire focus of this series is to sit down with people who are not yet Bitcoiners and answer the questions that they have about Bitcoin. I'd love to get your feedback about this interview on Fountain, so feel free to leave a comment there about what you think was interesting or what I could have explained differently or better. We're going to get to our interview with Anaya right after this. Business owners, unlock the benefits Bitcoin has to offer your business with a Bitcoin for Business Quick Start Guide. This 27-page guide highlights the 6 ways you can grow your business with Bitcoin. Check it out in the show notes. Anaya, welcome. This is going to be one of a few interviews with Bitcoin is Better of talking with people who do not yet own Bitcoin, just about Bitcoin, any questions they might have. We've already had some of these on the YouTube channel, and looking forward to hearing from you today. I don't want to steal too much of your thunder. I might add some additional things, but would you mind sharing a little bit about who you are so listeners know who they're hearing from?
Yeah. So my name is Anaya, like Josh said. I'm a fitness specialist, personal trainer, just graduated college, looking for some, been thinking a lot about finance, of course. So yeah, just looking forward to this interview and see what more I can learn about it.
For sure. And for listeners' context, you and I have had conversations two or three times probably about financial stuff, including Bitcoin. But to my knowledge, you haven't pulled the trigger yet.
I have.
On Bitcoin, right? So we'll probably talk about that a little bit today. You have brought some questions to the table. So I'm going to kick it over to you to share whatever the first question is you want to start with.
Yeah. So the first one's pretty simple. Like, what is Bitcoin? Like, how does it work? Explain it to me like I'm 5-year-old.
Okay. So I guess the simplest explanation, and there's always ways you can go kind of further into this, but Bitcoin is a type of money or maybe a system of value that no government or nation or corporation created. And most of our money today is something that a nation created. So this money is not not only created by any country, nation, or corporation, but it can't be controlled by anyone either. And so it's basically a money that anyone can transact with to anyone else in the world. It's free, open, and there are some things that you have to learn about it. But once you do learn them, it's pretty easy to use as well. So I don't know if that answers that question sufficiently, but hopefully a 5-year-old would at least have gotten a good bit of it. Are there other things like more specific things about Bitcoin that would be helpful to know kind of in that same thread?
Okay. So like who was it created by? Let's start there.
Yeah. So you may have heard the name before, but Satoshi Nakamoto is the name of the person behind Bitcoin. We don't know who that person is. And some people think it was a group of people, but Satoshi let people know that Bitcoin was launching before it launched. And then at a certain point in time, he started Bitcoin. And basically what Bitcoin is a bunch of different nodes that communicate with each other and check up on each other to make sure that everything on the network is as it is supposed to be. So at first it was him and like 2 or 3 other people. But over time it's grown to where now there are a lot of nodes on the network, which has made it much more secure. But that's been a long process across the last almost 16 years. So it officially launched at the beginning of 2009, and now we're getting towards 2025. So we don't know who Satoshi Nakamoto actually is. Some people have theorized. Some people have claimed to be Satoshi Nakamoto. And basically, if anyone hints at the fact that they might be or they might know who, a lot of people in the Bitcoin community don't really want to hear much about it. And part of that's because a lot of scammers have tried to kind of ride on the coattails of Satoshi. But also today, it doesn't really matter who Satoshi Nakamoto is, because Bitcoin is what it is. And even Satoshi couldn't control that today. So it's kind of taken on a life of its own. And if there are any changes to Bitcoin, in order for those changes to be implemented, the majority of the network, which is just individuals all around the world, have to agree that that is the best thing. So basically, nothing is going to happen to Bitcoin if the majority doesn't want it to happen. So that's why it's like it's not really feasible. It's technically possible, but it's very unlikely that anyone could ever take Bitcoin over. And the more security there is, the more people on the network, the less and less likely it becomes. So like even if the United States teamed up with a bunch of other countries, it would just be so expensive to try to even take over the network, get the majority of the network for even like, you know, 10 or 20, 30 minutes. So that kind of goes down like maybe a more technical conversation than is worth talking about now. But that's a little bit about who Satoshi is and also why it doesn't matter all that much who Satoshi is.
Yeah. So it's like computer based, like technology based money. Would you say it like that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of the best way to say this, but essentially it's a bunch of, it's the largest computing network in the world. And all of these computers are making sure that everyone's playing by the rules and they are confirming the network is operating as it's supposed to operate. So then that's where it comes into, and I don't know if you have a question about this or not, but Bitcoin mining, basically what mining is. There are a couple things about Bitcoin mining. First of all, there's the block reward, which is how new Bitcoin are issued. You may have heard that there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin, and that's like all the way out into the year 2140 or so is when the last Bitcoin, or actually it's, you know, a fraction of a Bitcoin, will be mined. And right now the block reward is 3.125 Bitcoin. So it's, you know, every 10 minutes a new block is mined. And so whatever computer mines that block gets the 3.125 Bitcoin. And frequently these days, a miner will be a part of a larger pool, because let's just say you have like a single Bitcoin miner operating in your home, which some people do. The best use case for like a single miner by itself is honestly just like it's a high powered computer that specializes in this particular Bitcoin mining algorithm, and it produces a lot of heat. So I have interviewed people before who are finding ways to use the heat from Bitcoin miners to, you know, heat homes or to heat greenhouses, different things like that. But like a single miner would be such a small amount of the total mining power on the network that you're not likely to actually mine a block with your miner. So usually what people do is they'll join a mining pool. And so whenever a miner from that mining pool, wins the opportunity to finalize this next batch of transactions, they get the 3.125 Bitcoin, the block reward, and they'll split it among everyone in the pool. So the more people you have in the pool, the more likely you are to win a block, And so it kind of all evens out over time. But the block itself is a batch of transactions. And like I said, on average, every 10 minutes, a new block is completed. And it's, you know, whatever transactions were in the queue to be kind of next in line based off of the fees they're willing to pay, they will be finalized. And then there's, you can go to a website called mempool.space for anyone listening right now. Mempool.space will show all of the blocks or all of the transactions that are waiting to be finalized in a block. And if you want to pay more money, a little bit more fees, then you can get your transaction finalized more quickly. And if you're a little more cost conscious, then you can pay less fees, and it might take a little bit more time for your transaction to actually finalize. So that's what Bitcoin mining is. And I don't know if you have any questions about that, or if you want to go to the next one.
Yeah. So it's like a block worth a certain amount of money, or is just
That's a good point. The block reward is kind of like the main chunk that a computer would get, or, you know, a miner. There's a person behind every computer. So right now, since Bitcoin is just past 100,000, that would be over $300,000 that the miner would get. Also, though, I had mentioned fees earlier, and every set of transactions has fees associated with it. And there have been times, even in the last, in the last probably 6, 7, 8 months, where the fees from the transaction have actually been higher than the block reward itself. So, like, I guess the reason I bring this up is because every 4 years, there's something called the Bitcoin halving, which is a kind of a programmed time where the block reward gets cut in half. Because originally it was 50 Bitcoin for every 10 minutes, which is crazy. You know, I've said before that when I was in college in 2009, I could have used my new MacBook and I could have, you know, joined the Bitcoin network because it's you know, free for anyone to join. I could have mined Bitcoin and probably gotten, you know, 50 Bitcoin and across a day or two. But I had no idea about it back then. And now there's so much more computing power on the network that it doesn't even make sense for a computer, just like a regular Mac or a PC, to try to mine Bitcoin on the Bitcoin network, because the hash pay would just be so uncompetitive. That's why you have to have these specialized miners called ASICs. So you do have the block reward, but then you also have the fees attached to it. And really, the fees are based on supply and demand. I mean, it's a total free market. 24/7, 365, the Bitcoin network is always going. If you want to send money to someone over Bitcoin, then, you know, in the form of Bitcoin, then you can do that. You'll have to pay a fee. And sometimes the fees are really high if everyone's trying to transact on the network at the same time. But sometimes the fees are very low. So it sort of, you know, depends on the supply and demand as to how high the fees are. But in the future, people expect for the fees to actually be greater than the block reward as like just the norm. And so I think that should probably answer your question pretty well. Some people, like, one last thing to say is, some people say, okay, when the final Bitcoins are mined in the year 2140 or so, what does that mean for Bitcoin? Will it still be secure? Will there still be people that are wanting to mine? And what mining becomes at that point is not receiving new Bitcoins, but it is processing transactions and earning fees for that. And by that point in time, the block reward will be so small and the fees will be so much greater than the block reward that even after the last Bitcoin is mined, the network will still continue and people will just continue earning fees as they want to. So I think that probably answers your question. I don't know if there's any follow-ups you have or if you want to go to the next one. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out. Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at Velus Commerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. If you are hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners.
So what makes Bitcoin like trustworthy?
Well, so a couple things. First of all, like I said, it's the largest and strongest computing network in the world. And all of the nodes and all of the miners are paying attention to make sure that all the other nodes are operating by the rules. And if someone's not playing by the rules, they can't participate. So that's one positive thing that makes it very secure. Another thing is that Bitcoin is open source. So anyone can join, anyone can see the code. Technically, you could get the code and copy it and change it to your liking. That gets into a different conversation, but you know, you could create your own version of Bitcoin, and people have done that in the past, but no one has an incentive necessarily to use your version of Bitcoin. They'd rather use the version of Bitcoin that everyone else is using because they can transact with anyone who's using it. So you'd want to use the most used and most secure network. So those would probably be some of the main things that I would say is just it's already extremely large and secure computing network, and you can verify the rules for yourself. You can look at the code. I mean, you and I are probably in a similar boat where we're not particularly techie, and if we looked at the code, we probably wouldn't be able to see too much.
Yeah.
But you can verify everything for yourself, and you can also run your own node. And basically that means you can enforce the rules you care to enforce. So if someone else did try to create some different rules or play by different rules in the network, you could reject anything they were doing because they're not playing by the consensus rules, which is the rules you're playing by. So I think that's probably the best explanations for why Bitcoin is trustworthy and secure. Some people are concerned by the digital aspect. Mm-hmm. What I would say is that across the last few years, we've probably seen that humans are far more likely to err when it comes to excessive money printing and things like that. We don't need to necessarily get into this, but there have been so many new dollars created across the last 4 or 5 years. And anytime someone has the ability to print more money, they're going to. Well, yeah. The rules of Bitcoin are baked in. Like it's following its code, and there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoin. And so at least when it comes to the limited aspect of Bitcoin, you can have confidence that it will be limited because you can see in the code that it will be limited. Whereas when it comes to the Federal Reserve or any number of politicians, they might say one thing to get elected, but once they get into office or to get appointed, but once they get into office, they can kind of do whatever they want. So I would say that the current code that is enforced by nodes on the network is much more likely to remain true and as it is today than people getting into office and kind of just doing whatever they want when they have power.
Gotcha. So you talked a little bit about mining. What does that look like? Like one Bitcoin, like what is that worth?
Yeah. So right now, first of all, Bitcoin is very volatile. It's been volatile to the upside over the long term, but the volatility does give some people pause. That said, Bitcoin has just recently passed over $100,000 per coin. And right after it did that, that was actually 2 nights ago as of this recording. And then the next day it fell back below $100,000. And now it's back up over $100,000 again. So that's what it's worth right now. The question that a lot of people are asking is, what will it be worth in the long run? And that's the big question.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to go into that or not. But right now, one Bitcoin is worth about $100,000. What Bitcoin will be worth is a question for much debate. Some people think that it will be worth nothing in the future. A lot of those people haven't taken a lot of time to understand Bitcoin. One of the critiques that I've heard in the past is just that the United States will shut it down because it might become a threat to the dollar. With the new administration coming into office in January, it seems like currently that's not much of a concern, even if it were feasibly possible. But like I was saying earlier, governments didn't create Bitcoin and they can't control it. As crazy as that sounds, because we're used to governments being able to shut down whatever they want. But the reason they can do that is because so many things in our world are centralized. And so, whoever can call up whoever else and say, hey, well, do what we want you to do, or there are going to be some negative ramifications for you. But with Bitcoin, that's not really the case, because there are all these nodes running around the world. No one country can shut them all down. And we even saw back in 2021, I believe. 2020. Yeah, I think 2021, when China banned Bitcoin mining. Yeah. A lot of the miners, not all of them, but most of them shut down in China. And quickly, they started opening up other places around the world, because you can just kind of go wherever you're welcomed. So I'm not too concerned about the government shutting Bitcoin down, any government. But then it's like, what is the value of a network that's open to anyone, that anyone can trade on, anyone can transfer value around the world? What is something like that worth? Like, no government can shut it down. And that's, I mean, I think there's a ton of value there. Actual numbers. A lot of people believe that Bitcoin could get to 200,000 or more across the next year. This is traditionally the year after, about 18 months after the halving, which just happened in April, is the most significant time for Bitcoin's price increase. And then following that, the year after, there has tended to be a significant correction where Bitcoin will fall 60, 70, sometimes 80%. There's some question as to whether or not that will happen this time. And, it's anyone's guess. But we're looking at potentially 200,000 to well above that if the United States adopts it as a strategic reserve asset. And then other countries fall in line. If the United States wants to buy 1 million Bitcoin, like some Republicans in the Senate have suggested, and others as well, then a lot of other countries are going to want to buy hundreds of thousands. There's only 21 million. And so, like, what does it look like when nation states start clamoring to get a piece of the pie? There's no more can be created. So it's like, that's one of the most interesting things to me about Bitcoin, which is it's so scarce that, like, no matter what, you can't create more. Even with something like gold, if there's enough financial incentive, you can go out and find more gold. A lot of times people know what the gold is. The gold price is just not high enough to warrant going down into the earth and getting it. So I think that we could see some significant price appreciation in the next year or so. Now, it's also possible that, you know, something terrible happens. You know, I don't think World War III is going to happen, but that's been tossed around. And so if we go into some significant war or a significant recession or something like that, everything's going to be hit. And, you know, Bitcoin might significantly be hit if that happens. But there are a lot of people that would say that in the next 10 years, maybe even less than that, Bitcoin is likely to hit $1 million per coin, which would be 10 times growth from where it is right now. And I would tend to be in that camp. How and when exactly is hard to say, but that's sort of the metric I'm operating under. Now, also, and some other people have tried to value it by saying, what percentage of the total assets in the world is Bitcoin right now? And then what, you know, where might it capture value from? So, for instance, would you rather hold something in that's digital and is significantly increasing in value every 4 years? Or would you rather hold real estate, which increases in value, but also has taxes that you have to pay, property taxes, upkeep, you have to worry about tenants potentially, has a lot of other headaches with it. Would you rather hold digital, a digital asset like Bitcoin, or real estate that has a bunch of headaches? And so a lot of people think that some value will be taken from real estate, some from bonds. Some people might say instead of Tesla or Nvidia or Apple, Amazon, I'm actually going to put a little bit of this money into Bitcoin. So take money from equities, like all these different places. If Bitcoin siphons a little bit, a few percentage points from each one, it's going to grow significantly. That's not even talking about nation state adoption and things like that. And so there's a lot of upside, potentially infinite upside. One of the memes that circles around in the Bitcoin world is infinity divided by 21 million, which is that Bitcoin can hold the value of everything. Like, there's no reason that a Bitcoin couldn't have some crazy high astronomical number. There's going to be 21 million and it'll be worth whatever people think it's worth. But if nations start piling in, corporations, individuals, everyone wants to get a piece of the pie, there's only so much to go around. So I guess the last thing I'll say here before I pause is that I think the number was there's only enough Bitcoin for every millionaire in the world to have about 0.28. So, you know, somewhere between a quarter and a third of a Bitcoin. And that's just every millionaire. And so, like, if the average person out there, and, you know, Bitcoin is better, is focused on Bitcoin education for middle class families. If the average family out there could get 0.1 or 0.2 Bitcoin, which is like, it's starting to be a lot of money for a lot of people, you know, 0.1 Bitcoin right now is $10,000. But if you can start getting a piece of the pie right now and keep it in long-term savings, then over the next 10, 15, 20 years, it'll probably be a whole lot more than it is today.
Gotcha. So how do you have access to that money? Like, how would you be able to use it? You know, we have like debit cards, credit cards. Like, how do you get that money out?
There are a lot of great ways to do this these days. Most people listening to this probably have Cash App. If you have Cash App, that's a place where you can go and just buy Bitcoin. And then right now, you know, there are three main categories that people place money in as a money develops. First of all, it is a store of value, which basically is just savings, right? You're putting your time, your effort into something. And the question is, do you want to put it into something like Bitcoin that may be volatile, but you know that if you have 0.1 Bitcoin, you're always going to have 0.1 Bitcoin out of the 21 million available? Or across the years, do you want to save in dollars? You know, in dollars, when I was born in the early 90s, a dollar was worth twice what it is today. So I'm probably more than that. And so like across 30 plus years, my dollars have become half of what they used to be. And if inflation continues to increase or remain higher than is kind of like optimal in people's eyes, which is like the 2% target is what people, I guess I'd say people, the Federal Reserve likes. If it stays higher than that on average across the next 10 years, then the value of your dollars will decrease even more quickly. So a great thing to do is just buy a little bit when you can. Some people, dollar cost average, which is every day, week, month, whatever. Maybe it's every time you get a paycheck. You can turn some of that into Bitcoin. So also there are a couple other resources that I've either used or would recommend that are kind of connected to how can you use it on a day-to-day basis or like in more practical ways. Just as of the recording of what we're doing today, I don't know when this will be released, but a guy named Jack Mahlers, who is the CEO of Strike, he just released this feature for his app, which is a way that you can, you know, buy and sell Bitcoin. You can turn it into dollars. He just he basically lives. He has $0. He just lives off of Bitcoin. And he has enough Bitcoin to where he can stomach the volatility. But over time, you know, his net worth increases significantly. But he just released this feature on Strike where you can pay your bills. So you can save. And also Strike has this feature, which I've not used, but has this feature where you can receive your paycheck into Strike and have some or all of it turned into Bitcoin, like instantaneously. And so, you know, just there was a time a couple of years ago when Bitcoin hit the cycle low down at 20,000. I think that actually like 16 something, but it was in that time period where I had, you know, well less than $100 on Strike. And I was just like, where do I have some extra money where I can buy Bitcoin? And I bought Bitcoin and it's more than 5x'd from there just because I held it there. And so, you know, you think about it, you put $100 at, you know, $16,000 when Bitcoin is worth $16,000. Now it's worth $100,000. That $100 is more than 500 now. And so that's crazy. Like over the long term, if you have long term savings, that's the value of Bitcoin. But you can pay your bills with Strike just with the Bitcoin in the account. You can pay your bills with Strike. Another great one is Fold. And Fold has a debit card attached to it. And it has some very similar features. But you can, you know, save in Bitcoin and you can push that Bitcoin to your card in the form of dollars. And then you can spend that like you would a normal debit card. So those are a couple possibilities that like how you can kind of interface with it in the real world and benefit from it and kind of easily transfer between dollars and Bitcoin when it's most advantageous for you. Another one, you know, listeners to this may not know, but I host a podcast called Business Bitcoinization, where I'm interviewing business owners about how they're using Bitcoin. And frequently it's, you know, they're keeping it on their balance sheet, or they might be accepting it. There are some other things that people do that are a little more clever that may not be worth talking about right now, but you can accept Bitcoin in your business. Or like, you know, if I were to sell you something or you were to sell me something, if we wanted to, we can make that transaction in Bitcoin. And so there are practical ways that people can use it. And that's where it kind of gets that second form of money, the second, I guess, level of money, which is a medium of exchange. That's like cash today. Like everyone pays for things with dollars. Dollars are our medium of exchange. And that is the future, I believe, for Bitcoin. There are some things that make this easier. You know, the base layer, a new set of transactions finalizes every 10 minutes. And so you're not going to pay for coffee on the Bitcoin network. Maybe the fees are really high. So it's like, you know, costs a dollar or $2 to buy your $5 coffee. You have to wait for 10 minutes before the transaction clears. Like that's not practical. No one's doing that. It used to, the network was fast enough and cheap enough to where I say fast enough. There was not as much competition. So the fees were lower and it was, you know, a little more feasible to spend money on the main chain, kind of the base layer of Bitcoin. But now there are what you call layer twos that are continuing to be developed, like the Lightning Network. The Lightning Network is a way for people to send money back and forth, basically at the speed of the internet. So it's a lot easier, it's a lot faster, and there are like hardly any fees involved. That's how a lot of the medium of exchange will take place with Bitcoin. There's some other layer twos and even layer threes that are being developed right now. And then the final one is a unit of account. And the unit of account is kind of how you measure things, you know. When someone says, how much is the coffee? And they say it's the latte, you know, it's like $5. They don't say it's, you know, 5,000 sats. They say $5. But when you get to the level where people are valuing things in Bitcoin, then that's a significant level, like of adoption, because people are thinking in sats. They're not thinking in cents. They're thinking in sats, which sats are just little tiny amounts of Bitcoin. Every Bitcoin can be broken down into 100 million satoshis or sats. And so like you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin. I don't know if I think you probably know that by now, but like you could get, I think it's 1,000 sats for $10 right now. So, or 1,000 sats for a dollar. So 10,000 sats for $10. Yeah. So the math is a little bit easier when it's the Bitcoin's at $100,000. But you know, you could buy pennies worth of Bitcoin as opposed to having to pay $100,000, which is for most people just, you know, impossible. So that's a long tangent, but those are some of the ways you can use Bitcoin. And I would highly recommend an app like Strike or like Fold. If you wanted to kind of begin interfacing with it a bit more in an easier way. One other thing about Fold is you can buy like gift cards and get a percentage back in Bitcoin as rewards. So those are some potential things that you or other people could use if they were interested. I have both apps. I use both to some degree, but I will probably be using both of them more in the future. So any other questions or maybe follow-ups to what I've just said?
I know you mentioned fees and people like or trading their Bitcoin or selling it or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like why would you want to though? Isn't it better for you to keep it so it'll build up?
That's the crazy thing about markets in general is that, you know, everyone has different reasons for doing what they're doing. Some people are not nearly as bullish about Bitcoin. So you get to this psychological level of $100,000 and you want to sell because you're like, I've been holding since it was $400 And whenever it gets to 100,000 or 98,000, it's like close enough, you're going to go and take some profits. But I agree that like with the money that you can save for the long term, keeping it in Bitcoin for as long as possible will very likely be incredibly valuable for you. So there are people that like to, you know, take these leveraged positions against Bitcoin. And like if it goes down, they make a whole bunch of money. And then there are people that are never selling. But the more people that learn about Bitcoin and see the value, the potential in Bitcoin, the more people that become like that, and each, you know, each cycle, each time Bitcoin goes super high, there's this whole new group of people that come in and say like, okay, I discounted this when I first heard about it, you know, last time or 2 times ago or 10 years ago, whenever it was. But now it's clear to me that Bitcoin is probably here to stay. So I should start taking it more seriously. And every time that happens, those people buy Bitcoin, and they buy Bitcoin with the intent of never selling or not selling for 10, 20, 30 years or passing it to their kids. And when that happens, the Bitcoin that's available on the market decreases, you know, like, so let's say that, you know, 15 million Bitcoin end up getting purchased, and they're like, people say, we're never selling this. It might be more than that today. But if that's the case, then that means there's only 6 million out there.
Yeah.
Well, there's also a bunch of Bitcoin that are lost or otherwise not available. Like Satoshi has about 1 million Bitcoin in his wallet. Mm. And those have not moved since he kind of fell off the face of the earth. And so those probably won't move. And so like there are about 4 million Bitcoin out there that probably won't move because they're lost or for whatever other reason. And so, you know, you're going to get to this point where the amount of Bitcoin available to be traded or bought and sold on a given day is tiny. And that's the Bitcoin people are going to be fighting over. Like that's the Bitcoin they're going to be, you know, offering their money for. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point in time, people are just going to say, I have this Bitcoin and I don't want to get rid of it. And that's when the price could really skyrocket, when there's this crazy crunch because everyone wants it and people realize there's not enough to go around right now. I mean, there's always enough for people, but like if people, you know, let's say you got in back in early 2017 when it was like $1,000 a coin, you bought five of them. Well, you, those five are probably locked up. You're saying I went from 1,000 to 100,000. There's no way I'm going to, you know, sell this stuff now, 'cause I think it's going to go so much higher. So yeah, it's why do people buy and sell? Who knows? Everyone has their reason. But at the end of the day, the best thing to do is to buy it, to hold it, and to reap the benefits in the long term.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we've addressed all of your questions. Do you have some additional ones that are worth chatting through or some additional things that have come up during the course of this conversation?
No, I think you pretty much hit everything. Even the questions I didn't ask you went into, so... I think it's starting to actually make sense now. Yeah. I think I'm starting to get it a little bit.
Well, you already know this, but any guest that comes on and shares who's not yet a Bitcoiner gets $50 of Bitcoin. So you are going to get your first Bitcoin given to you after this recording. And it's a good step in the hopefully what you would consider the right direction. But I would just would like to reiterate to anyone listening that if you have money that you can save for the long term, Bitcoin is a great way to do this. Even now, you know, $100,000, people say can't go any higher, but they've said that, you know, at 60,000, they said it at 10,000. They've said it at 1,000. People were selling at 400 because they bought it at 100 and it went up to 400. You know, I'm just sort of making these numbers up, but people have sold early and they've realized the error of their ways across the long term. So anyone who does, especially middle-class families that don't have a lot of extra money, if you can put some of that longer term savings account or whatever else, then it's worth considering what Bitcoin can do for your family or you as an individual in the long term. So, and I'm going to kick it back over to you for any final thoughts you may have before we finish up.
No, this was good. I'm probably definitely going to have, I can't think of any more questions right now, but once I get into it and actually start like investing in it, I think I'll definitely have more questions for sure. But that'll be offline, of course. But this was great. I learned a whole lot more.
Well, now you can hopefully share it with other people, because there are going to be more and more people talking about Bitcoin across the next year as the price very likely continues to increase. And now you probably know more than 99% of people out there. Maybe that's a little generous, but you know a good bit more because you've actually taken just 45 minutes here and a couple previous conversations to learn at least a little bit about it. And I think it's a little less, hopefully a little less cryptic now. I hope my answers have been clear enough.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Anaya, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Business Bitcoinization Show. Remember to check out the Bitcoin is Better YouTube channel and leave feedback about how you felt this interview went. I'd love to hear what you have to say. As always, keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading well.